Okay, good evening, everyone. I've read several times here and I'm always on first. So one of these days, I'm going to be up the programme and I shall be reading when people are still not cluttering up the bar and taking their coats off and arriving surreptitiously through the back door. Until then, this is, and for the first chapter of my novel called The Book of Miracles. And it started life a couple of years ago when I read an interesting article in The Guardian, no less, about miracles. And a professor in Cambridge had done a very complex mathematical calculation, working out how many moments we experience in any day, how many sensory moments, and how many seconds and minutes and so forth. And working out that if a miracle was something that was one in a million, then statistically we should all experience a miracle about once every 35 days. So, I'm still waiting for mine, but I think it's about recognition of miracles, and that whole thing started a bit of a snowball in my mind. So this book is about the nature of miracles. It's about the people who experience them and what happens to those who don't. And this is chapter one, and it's called Daniel and the Angel. He had not thought about his angel for many years now. As when he did so, it unsettled him and he was still a little afraid. He'd spent his whole life hoping to see one, whilst believing he would not, although he had to admit that when it came to it, the actual experience itself was not to be wished for. His was not a Christmas or an Easter angel, or one that might have appeared in the aisles of his church on a Sunday. It did not follow God's rules, or anyone else's for that matter. It was not even a tidy angel, but at least he had come for him, and he had been, after all, so very long in the waiting. By the time he met, he had a part-time job as a janitor in an office block on the far reaches of the new town, clocking off every night just as the first of the houseboat lights came along the canal. He'd taken to walking the long way home through narrow strips of field leading across the towpath and then up a flight of stone steps to the cobbled alleyways of his district. Often he'd stop off at the baker's on the corner to buy the last of the day's bread for a few euros. One evening, after a day that had much passed like any other, he unlocked his front door and found the angel right there amidst the brown stains of his apartment, boiling the kettle. "Sugar?" asked the angel as Daniel came through from the hallway, although the angel was stirring the tea as if she already knew the answer. As he approached the kitchen table, he was a bit alarmed to see that the angel was almost naked, apart from a thin, gauze-like material that seemed to shift and flicker under his gaze, and he couldn't help but notice a bright white streak right down the centre of her pubic hair. He wasn't sure if this made her more or less attractive, but he was sure that a man in his position shouldn't be having indecent thoughts about angels, and especially about the colour of their pubic hair. He was even more alarmed to see that she was over halfway through the ginger cake he'd been saving for his mother's visit on Saturday, which was already looming up in the far too near future. He hadn't yet told his mother about the events at St. Saviour's last year, and had been keeping up a complex pretense of an extended sabbatical. He did not want to complicate things just now. But watching the neat row of teeth sinking into the luscious moistness of the cake, he bit back an exclamation of annoyance. It was especially hard to get real ginger cake over here, and it was his mother's birthday, and he had promised. He didn't know why the angel couldn't have gone for the apple crumel, which could be bought at any of the stalls in the neighbouring Dapper Markt. "So," continued the angel, who had by now started in on the deluxe biscuit selection left over from Christmas and was biting noisily into the thickest part of his favourite chocolate digestive. "So," she repeated, addressing him as if they'd only just broken off some earnest theological conspiracy or other. The thing is, we need to talk, I think, you and me. Of course, he was getting ahead of himself with such reflections on angels, for at this point he knew her only as a spirit, an intruder, a statue, a stranger. When he'd taken to walking the long way back from his late shift, down by the drainage cuts in the flatlands, skirting the Western Garden suburbs and striking out across the pure, barren earth, he'd wanted to make it his, an exploration of landscape and time. A world away from the well-kept roads and the rugby pitch and the mock gables of his English home. And that particular night, he'd felt a quickening inside himself, a sudden rush of heartbeat of something coming back to him that was rightfully his. As he crossed the Rhine Dam, he faltered, then stopped, turning an ear back into the silence. This was his now, the centre of his new life, this place where the silver birch stood rooted in the flooded earth and the wild clouds stormed the sky. Suddenly from above, the rasping caw caw of wild geese rising, an inverted V flapping above him, blowing south, always south into the wind. As Daniel rounded the corner into his street, he almost fell over a man perched on the edge of the pavement between the tiny Middle Eastern Delights kebab shop and the adjoining retro junk house, whose window seemed currently to be filled with unidentifiable and apparently broken artifacts. The man wore a bright embroidered shirt and sat cross-legged, smoking a hookah, its curling pipe a coiled cobra, the surrounding air thick and hissing with the lush fruit flavours of the steam. The scent followed Daniel as he spiralled up the staircase leading to his attic rooms. He inhaled slowly, trying to place the memory. What was it now? Ah, yes, there it was, Middle England, mint-tipped roses and a waft of wet garden in early summer. What he had seen next through the hookah haze, what he had seen in his kitchen, was an elongated figure of spun silk, her image contracting, pulsing, vibrating at the back of his eyes. A translucent entity with slender white fingernails and pale, pale oatmeal hair tied in a dreadlock knot and pulled to one side, giving her a curiously lopsided appearance. And in all the time that he was to be with her, in all the time he had left, he never once looked her full in the face or answered her directly. It was to be as if they existed alongside each other, together in the room and yet occupying a different place. His home, her visitation, their past. The sculpture had been installed the year before his own arrival at St. Saviour's. His very own Angel of the North, said the Dean, who'd come down for a couple of days to show him around, settle him in. Though I wouldn't want to wake up to it of a morning, he'd added, addressing the ends of his moustache and hurrying past, eyes down. And right from the beginning, Daniel had set to wondering how they could exist together, the two of them. One hanging from the crucifix on the front of the church, and the other hanging from the thread of his belief within. At the time, he'd been working on a paper interpreting the writing of Herod's court historian, Nicholas of Damascus, and he'd been horrified not so much by the infamous slaughter of the innocents, to which he'd become accustomed, having read so many accounts of it, but by Herod's deathbed order of the murder of the 1,000 most prominent men in the land, so that upon his own demise, his kingdom would ring out with the sound of 1,000 weeping widows. On the afternoon of that first full day alone in the church, a sudden squall blew up, driving debris and litter under the porch door and sending the last of the autumn leaves scattering like dried starfish across the polished parquet of the vestibule. The flooring was the only part of the original building the architects had left him, but it still smelled of the musk and lavender of ancient histories. And that night, he'd taken a stroll around his new parish, enjoying a quiet moment of anonymity before his official induction. On his way back through the tiny churchyard, he'd seen an orange moon, an incandescent lollipop hanging in the sky above the swathes of mown grasses and broken stones that were all that was left of the graves. Most of them had been moved to make way for a new playground at the neighbouring primary school, and those still standing suffered badly from subsidence, looking incongruous against the 70s facade of the new church. But the sculpture on the front wall had remained in darkness, untouched by the strange rays of orange light. He dreamt about it for a while after that, often in the early hours, and the dreams were never pleasant. Gaping boreholes in the red brick frontage, with stainless steel limbs that hooked him in, squeezing his epiglottis with their metal nails until he awoke chilled and sweating with the rigors, and found the chain of his crucifix caught in the folds of the pillow slip and pulling a loop tight around his neck. While he was doing the washing up and putting the tea things away, something that had become apparent that angels didn't stick around to help with, she'd suddenly announced the need to pop out for a few minutes, it occurred to Daniel that his angel might be dangerous. He'd left the TV on in the sitting room, and he'd half an eye on an old rerun of Randall and Hopkirk Deceased on Hallmark, when he saw Hopkirk take a knife to someone who'd been threatening his earthly detective partner. Daniel thought he was probably overreacting, but he took the knife block and hid it behind the bleach under the kitchen sink anyway, just to be on the safe side. Despite his previous calling, he hadn't had that much to do with angels, at least not in this sort of close-up. His nan, though, used to talk about them come Christmas time. "Ask your angels," she'd say when he pestered her about some longed-for present or other, and she'd roll her eyes meaningfully towards an imagined heaven that seemed to exist somewhere above the centre light fitting. He didn't know why she hadn't gone along with the normal Father Christmas stories and the "you must be good all the year or you won't get anything at all" threats that all the other kids in his class got from their parents. But then again, his wasn't a normal family. He'd just finished putting things to rights after his unexpected visitor when the phone rang. He left it on answer phone. He'd had enough intrusions for one day. "Daniel?" He put the tea towel down. "Oh, God. Daniel!" It was his mother. "Daniel, Daniel, is that you, dear?" His mother was almost totally deaf now and had been known to conduct an entire conversation with his answer phone. Reluctantly, he clicked off the machine and picked up the phone. "Hello, mother. Are you there, Daniel? I can't hear you." "I'm here, mother," he shouted. The conversation had now reached such a shrieking of decibels that the sash windows rattled with the vibrations. And there was also a lot of noise coming from wherever his mother was. It sounded a bit like a fish market in the background. He inhaled deeply, breathing in through his mouth and out through his nostrils, just as his therapist had shown him. "Your meadow on a summer's afternoon." "Where are you?" he asked, somewhat more calmly. "At Central Station, Daniel. You were supposed to be meeting me." He wasn't sure if this was a question or an accusation. "On Saturday, mother, today's Wednesday. But where are you, Daniel? I don't know which tram to get." "I'm at home." "Oh, look, never mind. Just stay right there, okay? I'm coming for you." And just as his mother put down the phone, he looked out of the kitchen window and saw the angel treading her way lightly through the park opposite, nodding to the man in the bright shirt, making her way across the pavement, and so she came to the outside of his building. And then he heard the unmistakable sound of the entrance door slamming shut behind her. This was going to need careful handling. "But why now?" he asked, truly puzzled, when at last his mother had been walked down to her Gastenkammer and they were alone again, seated at the table with a fresh pot of tea steaming fragrant between them. "I was waiting for someone to bring me," shrugged the angel. "It took a long time." "Yeah, well, Daniel could go along with that. He knew all about waiting. He'd gotten pretty good at it over the years. He'd had to since he'd taken up religion, which it seemed to him, now that he was free to think about it, involved a lot of waiting. Waiting for the church bells to ring, which would only happen if some kind soul donated an eye-watering sum to their restoration fund. Waiting for the parish minutes to be distributed by the bespectacled Mr. Pannett, which would never happen, as when he was first elected, he'd been in the early stages of Alzheimer's. And waiting for a saviour to come. And as far as he could see, the jury was still out on that one. Back in the kitchen, under the buzz and flutter of the fluorescent light, the angel was still talking. "Since we can't cross water, so you know. Anyway, I had to wait for the exhibition to be on at the museum on the Kirkengard. I'm their star attraction." Daniel was having sex with the angel, and he had to admit that so far it was a very pleasurable experience indeed, although he hadn't actually had sex before, so there wasn't much to compare it with, unlike the other lads at the seminary, who had all claims to have a bit of a past. Daniel wasn't exactly sure quite what that meant exactly, but he privately suspected that one of his main motivations for becoming a priest was to avoid having to find out from personal experience. And as a much younger man, the very thought of the transfer of all those teeming bodily fluids had been quite distasteful. But now he'd also discovered that despite not having had much practice, he did seem to be rather good at it. The sex, that is. He'd yet to discover the truth about the bodily fluids. And to be honest, he wasn't entirely sure how all this had happened in the first place. He remembered the tea being finished and the whiskey being started, a rather good Glenfiddich ancient reserve that Angel had bought at the Amsterdam whiskey stores when she'd popped out earlier. And he remembered it being very late, and that when he meant to escort her into the street, she'd stumbled on the step that led down from his hallway, and he'd put out his hand to steady her, and then his fingers had brushed against her right nipple as she fell against him, and one thing had most definitely led to another. In fact, he vowed to have a great deal more sympathy in future when he was on the receiving end of such an explanation from one of his erstwhile parishioners, should he ever go back to being a priest, that is. Having, to his shame, not ever having been entirely convinced by it before. But just then, his thoughts were interrupted by a hand and the subtle pressure of a warm, willing tongue lapping at the hairs on the inside of his thigh. He reached down and entwined his fingers in the slithery coils of Angel's braids, and all thoughts of cause and effect were cast aside. Temporarily, at least. Daniel groaned and turned over, pulling the bedding right up underneath his chin. Daisy May was thundering about on top of the duvet, her claws scraping and scratching at the thin polyester. Her squealing meows were beginning to hurt his eardrums, and pulsating clusters of pain were making themselves felt in the nerve endings behind his eyelids. She needed feeding, and he knew from past experience that she would give him no peace until her kitten jaws closed around the first moist mouthful of her breakfast. He pushed himself upright and slowly, very slowly, eased his legs over the side of the bed. He stayed like that for a moment, afraid of the repercussions of any sudden movements. And he was just wondering whether to risk standing up when he caught sight of his feet and saw that there was something very wrong with his socks. One was inside out, showing the not very neat knit one pearl one of his mother's casting off, and the other was a bright pink with a herd of purple reindeer making their way across the ankles, a Christmas present from the woman who did for him back at St. Saviour's. A present that he wasn't sure was entirely appropriate given the current circumstances. Come to think of it, what was he doing wearing his socks in bed anyway? Angel! Oh God, Angel! And he twisted himself back around towards the bed, bringing a swift gush of bile up into his throat and blurring his already patchy vision. The sun was shining unnaturally brightly through the slatted blinds. There was the faintest indentation on the pillow next to his, and the soft, sweet smell of dog rose filled the air. But Angel herself was gone.